Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today we're going to be looking into something really fascinating, supernatural beliefs in Kurdish culture. Specifically, the idea of jinn, or sin, as they're known in Kurdish.
That's right. We've got a collection of sources here that really help us understand how these beliefs developed within the very diverse history and culture and the religious landscape of the Kurdish people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll be looking through the material you've gathered, trying to pull out the key ideas about jinn in Kurdish traditions, you know, starting from the basics in Islamic thought, right through to how they show up in folklore and how different Kurdish religious groups see them differently.
Okay, great. So maybe let's start at the beginning. These foundational concepts of jinn. Where does this idea actually originate?
Well, the concept itself, it has really deep roots going back to pre-Islamic Arabia. It was then sort of absorbed and integrated into Islamic theology.
Right.
Islam describes jinn as beings God created from smokeless fire, which is quite different from humans made from clay or angels from light.
A completely different substance, then.
Exactly. And they exist in this unseen realm, Al-Haib.
Yeah.
Understanding that unseen aspect is pretty fundamental to how jinn are perceived in Islamic thought, their nature, and their influence.
Okay, so existing unseen.
Mm-hmm.
What else? What are some of their sort of key characteristics in that Islamic view?
Well, crucially, they have free will.
So they
can make choices, which means they're morally accountable, you know, for what they do.
Yeah.
They live in this unseen world, Al-Haib, and they're believed to have societies like tribes and nations.
Like parallel societies.
In a sense, yes. They're thought to live, eat, drink, have families, though their lifespans are often considered much, much longer than ours.
And they're famous for having some pretty extraordinary abilities, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Like invisibility, shape-shifting, that kind of thing?
Precisely. Those are very common beliefs, that they can become invisible, that they can change their shape maybe into people or animals and travel huge distances incredibly quickly. And some traditions also suggest they can, well, influence human thoughts. They're also often linked with specific places, frequently sort of desolate or liminal spots, mountains, old ruins, even certain trees sometimes.
That's interesting, the connection to nature, because even before Islam, weren't there already beliefs linking these kinds of beings to the natural world?
Yes, absolutely. In pre-Islamic Arabia, jinn were often tied to nature, sometimes even worshipped. They were thought to inspire poets, soothsayers.
Okay.
There were even some early myths that painted jinn as the earth's original inhabitants before humans who got banished by angels after causing chaos.
So Islam comes along and incorporates this existing belief system.
It does, yeah. Islam definitely affirms jinn exist. You have the story of Iblis, often identified as a jinn refusing God's order to bow to Adam. That shows their potential for defiance.
Right, the fallen angel idea, or fallen jinn in this case.
Well, it highlights the free will aspect. But importantly, the Quran also mentions jinn, who are believers. So it's crucial to remember not all jinn are seen as evil. Islam provided this kind of theological framework, but it often layered over or blended with the local beliefs that were already there.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
So keeping that foundation in mind, we really need to talk about the Kurdish context itself. I mean, the cultural and religious diversity there is huge. Could you give us a quick overview?
Sure. So the Kurds are an Iranic people, indigenous to the region called Kurdistan, which, as you know, stretches across modern day Turkey, Iran, Iraq, and Syria. They have their own distinct languages.
And historically, no single unified state.
Exactly. And that lack of a unified nation state has deeply shaped their history. Religiously, they are incredibly diverse. The majority are Sunni Muslims, mostly following the Shafi'i school, often with quite a strong Sufi influence. But you also find Shia communities, Alevis, particularly in Turkey, with their syncretic tradition mixing reverence for Ali with older elements. Then there are the Yazidis, with their ancient, unique, monotheistic faith focused on Tawus HaMelech.
Who they strongly reject is Satan. Right, that's a key point.
A very key point, yes. They don't equate Tawus HaMelech with the Islamic Iblis or Satan. And then you have the Arsanis, or Ali Haq, mainly in Western Iran, with their esoteric beliefs about divine figures manifesting, plus historically other minorities and, of course, growing secularism, too.
It's such a complex picture. And you mentioned the geography earlier, the mountains. It seems likely that helped preserve all this diversity, didn't it?
Very likely, yes. That relative isolation in mountainous areas probably played a big role in allowing these different traditions to persist side by side. So yeah, when we talk about supernatural beliefs, we absolutely have to keep this diverse religious background in mind.
Definitely. So, okay, with that diverse context established, how do jinn fit into Kurdish origin stories? Because there are some quite surprising myths connecting Kurds and jinn, aren't there? But maybe not from the Kurds themselves.
That's right. There are these external myths, stories told about the Kurds, not by them necessarily linking them to jinn, often through King Solomon.
Solomon again. Interesting.
Yeah, one story goes that Solomon commanded his jinn to bring him lots of beautiful maidens. Then, after Solomon died, these jinn and maidens supposedly settled in the Zagros Mountains, and their children became the ancestors of the Kurds.
Wow, that's quite a lineage. Jinn and maidens.
Is it? Another version from the historian Al-Masudi suggests Kurds descended from Solomon's concubines who were impregnated by a demon called Jasad.
A demon this time.
Yes, and this story even claims the name Kurd comes from an Arabic word meaning they drove them out, implying they were expelled. It potentially carries a pretty negative, maybe even derogatory spin.
Yeah, that sounds like an othering narrative, trying to explain them away somehow.
It could be interpreted that way. It certainly contrasts sharply with the origin myths that are actually central to Kurdish identity itself.
Like the story of Kawa the blacksmith.
Exactly. The Kawa myth is absolutely foundational. It's the story of the blacksmith Kawa overthrowing the evil tyrant Sahak. It's the basis for Newroz, the New Year celebration. It's a powerful story about fighting oppression, about freedom.
So a story of resistance, not of being descended from demons or jinn expelled somewhere.
Precisely. The external jinn myths might tell us more about how outsiders viewed the Kurds, maybe exoticizing them, whereas the Kawa myth is about Kurdish self-understanding, resilience, and national identity. Those external myths don't seem to carry the same weight for Kurds today as Kawa does.
That makes sense. Okay, so let's shift focus now to how jinn or sin, as you said, is the common term, actually appear within Kurdish folklore itself.
Right, and sin is definitely the most common modern Kurdish term, showing that Islamic influence. But there are other words, too.
Like dev? You mentioned that one.
Yes, dev. It's an older term, maybe pre-Islamic, and it usually means something more like a demon or an ogre, more malevolent.
Okay.
Then there's a really interesting one, Şimşek-Tirka.
Şimşek-Tirka. What does that mean?
It translates roughly as those creatures better than us, which suggests a kind of awe, maybe even respect for their power.
Wow. Better than us. That's quite something.
Isn't it? And you also hear peri, which is like fairy in the West, and sometimes do, which can be used for jinn, or sometimes specifically for spirits living in sacred trees.
Okay, so quite a range of terms. What about how they're depicted? I read something about reversed hands and feet.
Oh, yes. That's a very specific and striking image in Kurdish folklore. This ulanjen, one bude pashine, their hands and feet are backwards. It's quite distinctive.
Very creepy.
It is. And they're widely believed to be shapeshifters, too. Now, in terms of how they interact with people, it's often negative in the stories, leading people astray, causing bad luck or sickness. There's also this idea that getting emotionally attached to a sin is dangerous, and the concept of spirit possession singerton, being caught by a sin.
Singerton. Hmm. So possession is a known phenomenon.
It is within the folklore, yes. And that image of the reversed feet, it really captures the imagination. It makes you wonder where such a specific, unusual detail comes from, doesn't it?
It really does. And you mentioned the connection to nature earlier, especially trees.
Yes, a very strong connection. Certain ancient or special trees called Dari Miraz are often seen as homes for these spirits.
Sacred trees.
Sacred trees, exactly. And the spirits there might grant blessings or inflict curses. You still see the practice sometimes of people tying rags or strips of cloth to these trees.
Why do they do that?
The belief is it can help absorb healing power from the tree or the spirit within it. These spirits are often seen as guardians, you know, guardians of sacred places, guardians of nature itself, and they might take revenge if someone disrespects or damages these places.
So it echoes much older, perhaps pre-Islamic nature veneration.
Definitely seems to. And all this is woven into Kurdish oral traditions, folk tales, legends, songs, proverbs. You even find Kurdish versions of well-known Middle Eastern stories like Aladdin Eladi, Ulambeya, New Ways.
Aladdin in Kurdish.
Yep. So the folklore really takes the general idea of djinn and makes it Kurdish with these unique details like the reverse limbs or that term jimesetirka. It shows that blend of Islamic ideas and much older local beliefs.
It's fascinating how it all mixes together. Okay, so we have the folklore, but how do these beliefs actually play out across those different religious communities we talked about earlier? Yeah. Because presumably a Sunni Kurd, a Yazidi Kurd, and a Levi Kurd... Yeah. They aren't all going to view sin in exactly the same way.
No, absolutely not. The beliefs vary quite significantly. For Sunni Kurds, their understanding is likely closest to mainstream Islamic ideas about jinn, but like we said, often colored by local folklore and maybe Sufi mystical traditions as well.
Okay, that makes sense. What about Alevi Kurds?
Well, Alevism itself is syncretic, blending different traditions. They do acknowledge jinn sinler alongside angels and devils within their own specific cosmology that emphasizes divine light and the importance of Ali. So their view of jinn would be shaped by those core Alevi beliefs.
Right. And Yazidism, we touched on this, it's quite different theologically.
Very different. For Yazidis, jinn as a specific category aren't really central to their faith. Their focus is on God, on Tawusi Melek, the peacock angel, who, again, is not Satanless for them, the seven angels, and also nature spirits they call Zudans. So the Islamic concept of jinn doesn't really figure prominently.
So it's just not a major part of their worldview?
Not in the same way, no. And then for the Yersani, the Ali Haq.
Yes.
Their cosmology is focused on divine manifestations, sort of successive embodiments of the divine. There's an interesting point made in some sources about how Malak Towers, who is revered by Yazidis, might be contextually labeled as Shaitan during what they call the era of Shariat, religious law, but viewed differently in the era of Hakikat, truth or reality.
So a much more nuanced, maybe symbolic understanding rather than a simple good versus evil djinn idea.
It suggests a more complex, context-dependent perspective, yes. It's not straightforward.
Wow, okay. This requires really understanding the nuances of each specific tradition.
It really does. You can't just apply one blanket idea of djinn across the board.
Ooh. Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Rose Bosch, Hannah.
Ah, fantastic. Roge Bosch.
Ooh, that smells wonderful today.
It really does. It's got that perfect balance of spice, I think. Not too bitter at all.
No, and just the right amount of sweetness for me. Hannah, you've absolutely nailed it today.
He really has. Right, let's take a moment then. Enjoy this excellent chai.
Yes, let's. Short implied pause. Ah, that was lovely. Oh. Really hit the spot.
Perfect. Okay, ready to carry on.
Yep, refreshed and ready.
Good.
Yeah.
So, as we've been discussing, these beliefs about djinn in Kurdish culture are just so rich and multi-layered. What's really striking is how this core Islamic concept got woven together with local folklore and then interpreted through all these different religious lenses we talked about.
Yeah, from those maybe questionable origin myths, linking them to King Solomon, right through to their roles in folktales with reversed feet.
Exactly. And the different levels of importance they have in different faiths, central for some, less so for others, it really gives you a window into the complex spiritual world of the Kurdish people.
It absolutely does.
Ultimately, I think to grasp these beliefs, you really have to appreciate the history, that vibrant folklore, and crucially, the religious diversity that is just so fundamental to Kurdish identity.
It really shows how one single concept, like djinn, can be shaped and transformed by the unique culture of a place, doesn't it?
It really does. It's a great example of that cultural interplay.
So thinking about all this, this exploration into Kurdish beliefs about djinn, it does leave you with a question, doesn't it? For you listening, maybe consider this. How do these kinds of supernatural stories, these narratives about the unseen, reflect how a community sees itself, its place in the world, and its relationship with forces beyond the everyday?
Hmm, that's a good thought. Perhaps looking at spirit beliefs in other cultures might offer even more perspectives on that question, how different people make sense of the unseen world around them.
Definitely something to ponder.